Good afternoon, sir.
It's long last.
So those are some of the things that we need to
to look at. I don't know in terms of our presentation, how are we going to go about this? The request was made and we responded positively to that request to have this meeting. But anyway, we were going to end up having a meeting to get briefings by the department on how far are they now. I mean, from level 5 to level 1, what has changed? What are the possible, positive things that can happen in the near future in terms of relief and to the artists as well as the people in the performing arts. May I give this opportunity to a representative from the theater industry. I don't know who's going to make that presentation. And then from there, we will engage as members, and the questions will be answered by the department, and then we will either have a way forward and close the meeting. Are we agreed with the way I suggest we run the meeting? If so, then let's go over to the theater industry to give us a presentation. Who will be presenting on your behalf?
That's all good. Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Jacob van Rensburg.
That's right. To finish, there's one thing that I forgot that is very important because the request came to me from one honorable member, I think it's Mahalakis, who said that he received a letter from the theatre workers, and that is where it all started. Up to now. So I'm happy that we are where we are now. And over to you. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Yes, I did write to Mr. McLuck. And thank you very much for your time to bring our serious concerns for us, a very highly skilled team of people, to assist me in giving you a democratic overview of the sector in order for us to address the issues that we feel need to be addressed. We do come in good faith as invested stakeholders in this industry, and we would also like to make some recommendations. So without further ado, I'm going to launch our presentation. Are you able to see this?
Yes, I can see this from where I'm sorry, I'm actually off sick. And over to you.
All good. Seems I need to do full screen. Let me just try and reshare this.
We could see it, Tucker. Yes.
Is it back on?
Yes, it's perfect.
All right. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that. Without further ado, I would just quickly like to introduce all the speakers that are going to each be representing. So my name is Jacob van Rensburg. I am the executive producer of the Art Theatrical, an independent theater maker. We also have Yvette Hardy, who is the National Director of ASSETESH South Africa, joined by Gregory McCormack, choreographer and chairperson of the Stand Foundation. We also have Ishmael Mohammed, the Director of the Center for Creative Arts at the University. Laura Foot-Newton, the CEO of the Baxter Theatre in Cape Town. Petronelle Bart, the founder of TEO Theatre. Paul Molepo unfortunately had a family crisis and won't be able to join us, but we will still address his points in the presentation. And lastly, we have Lizani Smith, who is an active arts pacifist, she says. So that will be the team. And just to reiterate, today our presentation will consist of 3 parts. Firstly, an overview of the current state of the sector. Secondly, we'll be raising some serious concerns that need addressing. And finally, we'd like to make some recommendations, after which we will discuss be open for a question and answer session. So I'm going to give over to Gregory and Yvette to take the floor.
Thank you so much, Yaku, and thank you so much, Chair and DG, and all the honourable members who are here. It's a great privilege to be able to speak to you about the very serious situation that we find ourselves in as theatre and dance practitioners. We wanted to start off by talking to what the theatre and dance sector contributes to South Africa. And Greg and I are going to speak to human development, social development, economic development, and contribution to brand South Africa. So, Yaku, if you could move the slides along. So we know that the arts are intrinsic to our basic human rights and freedoms, and we know that the arts are needed to affirm and to celebrate our identities, to interrogate our world views, to express our cultural diversity, to grow empathy, and to build solid solidarity. But I think this is particularly true in times of crisis and division. We know that under apartheid it was the arts, it was song, dance, performance that kept the flame of hope alive, that gave people a sense of their own agency, even when human rights were being denied them. So the arts can foster that sense of agency, they can foster solidarity, they can nurture those spaces for cross-cultural collaboration. They can be the space in which a new society is envisaged. And we've seen this again now under COVID-19. That the arts are what people reach out for in terms of their need for catharsis, for their mental health, for their sense of well-being. The arts is what we turn to when we're under stress. But also, really crucially, the arts are vital to our development as human beings and to our capacity to learn. And this is even more important now in the 21st century, where we are seeing that the skills that are needed most specifically are things like creativity, communication, collaboration, critical thinking. These things are considered 21st century skills fundamental to our being able to engage with the challenges of the day and with the fourth industrial revolution, which we are already inside. And the arts are the best mechanism for embedding these skills, and they need to be introduced and they need to be sustained from early childhood right the way through life. So we know these things to be true from case studies from all over the world. But in 2015, Atheter South Africa embarked on a program called the Kickstarter Educational Empowerment Program to empower creative arts teachers in KZN, in Free State, and in Northern Cape. And this has been a case study for several reports and also several master's theses. And we've been able to demonstrate that when the arts are prioritized in a South African context, in South African schools, whether they are rural schools, any city schools, township schools, the learning environments are transformed. Teachers are better equipped to teach not just the arts, but all subjects. Learner attendance and motivation improves, and academic achievement is enhanced. So as far as we're concerned, theatre, dance, the performing arts are vital to our development as human beings. Over to you, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to honourable members. In terms of contribution to social development, theatre and dance offers engaging and accessible and productive interventions to address social ills, benefiting marginalized and disadvantaged communities and society at large. And I come from that society in Soweto, where I was raised, which really made the circumstances that allowed me to look at how I could change my own disadvantages of where I come from using dance as a tool to address the social ills. Theatre and dance is used successfully for particular agendas in prisons, in schools, industrial settings, or with particular groupings, like, you know, the sex workers, abused women, etc. Particularly with a country that is so entailed in in women that are being violated on each and every day. So we're using theater and dance to address such important issues. Capacity to educate, inspire, comment, propose, and hope for the future, to change behavior and attitudes, and build consensus in society across diverse groupings. So theater and dance as tools of advocacy. It's a weapon of struggle, as we know, pre-1994, it was protest theater that stood tall to fight the injustices in our own country. In post-1994, we're still addressing issues that include xenophobia, HIV, and AIDS. So we still have an important role to play. The use of theater and dance to educate and apply to broader society has been very strong in South Africa, and we are considered world leaders in applied theater. Thanks, Ivat.
So economic contribution, I'm not going to go through all these numbers specifically because I know that you know them. We know that the performing arts make a significant contribution to the economy. And we also know, especially if we look at that point which talks about the sector growth at a rate of 3.4%, in other words, above average of the rate of growth of the other creative and cultural industries, we know that there is a huge potential for growth in the performing arts industry and that it is partially untapped. What I really want to draw your attention to here is that these figures do not include the informal sector, which is a huge part of performing arts and celebration. The chair mentioned this in his introduction, and the fact that we have this vast gig economy, which is both vulnerable and extensive, and at least 46% of people in cultural occupations are in that informal sector. So in the May COVID-19 impact report, it was clearly shown by the South African Cultural Observatory that the performing arts celebration space is the space which is most vulnerable to the lockdown. And you're going to hear more about these realities in the presentations that follow. And I think that from an economic point of view right now, we are a sector really under stress. Thank you.
Thanks. In terms of contribution to brand South Africa, every time we pick our bags and fly to other countries in the world, we take a piece of us. We take part of South Africa to the world. So it's theater and dance that provide a window into the diverse cultures of the country, while also promoting the most innovative and expressive ways of thinking and of being. Festivals and cultural events contribute to a sustainable and a dynamic tourism industry, while positioning South Africa as a gateway to Africa, but also to the world. Cultural and heritage sites, inner cities and rural villages are all enriched and enriched through theater and dance. Touring productions promote cultural curiosity and understanding, demonstrate artistic excellence and unique perspective value, and traditions that challenge globalization. Artists and companies as global ambassadors of a diverse, free, dynamic and democratic South Africa. Our performance art is highly valued internationally, and it is a key contributor to strengthening relationships between countries, regions, groupings such as BRICS. COVID-19 has seen almost complete cessation of activity on this level. Although there have been some advantages where artists have had access to digital engagement, often without economic return, but potentially building a brand. And that is something that we always in the art have mastered so well that every time we go away, we go into another country, we are taking the dynamism of our own country to the world, therefore exposing the good and that the country has to offer. In closing on this one, I would like to draw your, as the committee, to please consider to give recognition to the contributions of the theatre and dance sector to the human, social, and economic and tourism potential of our sector. And we call on the Select Committee to move for an inter-ministerial engagement with our sector through the Ministries of Social Development, Health and Education, Labour and Employment, Small Business Development, Economic Development and Tourism. I would like to invite Ishmael Mohammed to present the next
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee, Digital Arts and Culture, and colleagues. My colleagues have
presented the importance and the value and the contribution that the arts make to South Africa, particularly the live theatre and dance sector. However, I want to get back to 1994. The government has inherited the four performing arts and its four theatres of the apartheid system. The Cultural Institutions Act No. 119 of 1998 determines the revised governance of these theatres and how these councils would have members who are appointed by the Minister of Arts and Culture. These theatres I'm talking about is the Artscape Theatre in Cape Town, the Packers Theatre in Bloemfontein, the Playhouse Theatre in Durban, and the State Theatre in Pretoria. The Independent Market Theatre Foundation, which was established through donor funding in 1976, had opened its doors to the historic Soweto uprising of June 1976, was reported as an independent company that advocated for social justice. It built its reputation on free speech, free creativity, and the opportunity to open all theatre doors to all South Africans, irrespective of race. One needs to begin to understand that when that theatre opened in 1976, it opened 2 years before the theatres in South Africa had opened their doors to all races as a result of the imposition of the cultural boycott of South Africa and the pressure from the international community to open the theatre sector in South Africa. The Wintergraaf Theatre, which is a sixth theatre that became a cultural institution in 2015, was marred by corruption and maladministration in its time since it had become a theatre, and in 2018 it had become absorbed as a cultural institution act under the administration of the Market Theatre. So what we have now is essentially five cultural institutions governed in terms of the Cultural Institutions Act of 119 of 1998. And what is really important to note, in the past 26 years, not a single state-funded theatre has been built in any of the remaining provinces by the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. And thus, what we have done in 26 years, is to retain the kind of apartheid spatial legacy for theatre development and the theatre economy across our country. But I also want to highlight that in the budget speech of 2018, the Minister of Art and Culture reported to Parliament that a theatre will be built in Limpopo province. This promise was again repeated in February 2020, and to date we have not an evidence of a brick laid or a foundation dug in any of those particular provinces. Now, the independent producers and community-based theatres in those particular provinces where there are no state theatres remained both challenged before COVID-19 and they remain even more challenged now with COVID-19. Because the state's cultural institutions in Gauteng, Western Cape, Free State and the KwaZulu-Natal, although they've not been operational, they have been able to go online and stream some of their pre-recorded productions from their archives. Now, whilst that may be good, what we need to understand is that the streaming of archival material does not create work. For unemployed, for actors and freelancers who are unemployed as a result of the COVID-19 lockdown. So the strategy around the way cultural institutions have opted to go for streaming has been counterproductive to the welfare and the economical sustainability of freelance workers who have been most hard hit by the lockdown. Added to that is that we have 36 municipal theatres across the country. All these theatres have had to shut down. Now, with the exception of the Durban Civic Theatre, which is a producing house and can produce its own work, all other municipal theatres in our country are operating as receiving houses. The shutdown of these theatres means that independent producers and independent artists and community-based artists are
across the breadth of our country, but particularly in townships and rural communities, have absolutely no avenue for spaces where they can even record any kind of online production for streaming. And even if the lockdown is eased, which it now is, and you know, some theaters can open, the provision of COVID-19 sanitation and PPE for productions remains the responsibility of independent producers, because the municipal theaters across our countries do not even have the budgets for it. Now, for independent theater companies who struggle to finance their productions, and for freelance community-based artists who pool their personal resources to fund their work, any added cost for COVID-19 protocols is literally going to render them completely out of pocket and even worse off than where they probably were before they even walked into the theater. And there is no strategy at the moment around the kind of artist relief, around how artists who are moving gradually into those particular spaces are going to be provided with the economics to be able to ensure that even under the lowest conditions, they are able to work under safer conditions. Now, the German Civic Theatre, which applied for relief funding, was unsuccessful. In fact, the DAC owes the theatre, the German Theatre, a grant of 1.6 million rand since 2018. Let alone having any kind of funding now, given the loss of income that the theatre has had. Now, if the German Civic Theatre, which has all the resources and the human resources deficiency to fill in bureaucratic forms, has been unsuccessful at securing assistance from the Artists Relief Fund, it makes us understand why community-based artists and independent artists across our country who do not have that access to human resources and who do not understand the bureaucratic mechanisms of our country have failed to secure funding from the Artists Relief Fund. Mr. Chairperson, I also want to point out that the independent theatre circuit and the community-based circuit in South Africa have to apply for project funding, which is a completely unsustainable way of growing the arts in the centre, in the country. It does not allow companies to even plan their livelihoods for a year. They go from one project to another project with absolutely no guarantee that they are going to get funding for the next project. So it leaves artists in a situation of limbo constantly. And we've seen that as a result of that ineffective funding mechanism for independent production companies, the vast number of independent producers and freelancers have been left destitute during COVID-19. The cancellation of projects as a result of the lockdown does not allow funds that companies have obtained for project funding to be deferred, to be used for relief, but it has to be deferred. Now, if there is no relief for the interim period, it renders arts groups in serious financial challenges, with some of them now permanently shut down. How on earth are companies who have literally been forced to shut down even be able to create any kind of work in a deferred state? The largest number of theatre workers in South Africa are freelancers, and hence do not even qualify for unemployment benefits as a result of the lockdown. The arts sector has been resilient at initiating several relief efforts from its own resources to support colleagues in the industry. And this goes from organizing food schemes amongst artists themselves to efforts which include relief provided by the Feed the Crow initiative, initiatives driven by the World Music Festival, and efforts by the Theatre Benevolent Fund. Now, Honourable Chairperson, and all members of the committee, I want it to be noted that the Theatre Benevolent Fund is a registered charitable trust with more than three decades of an accountable and a reliable track record of providing relief efforts to the theatre sector. The Theatre Benevolent Fund would have been an effective structure to disseminate relief for the sector. unlike persons appointed by the minister who sit on the councils of cultural institutions and drain these institutions of hundreds of thousands of rands per annum for the poor governance of these institutions, all the members of the Theatre Benevolent Fund, since the charity's inception more than 3 decades ago, have rendered their services voluntarily, professionally, and accountably. And yet, the TFAC has not even engaged the Theatre Benevolent Fund to identify destitute artists or to channel funding to destitute artists through what is a registered, a legitimate, a credible, and an accountable charity fund. The TFAC's response is that the sector needs to work for SIFSA. This is a federation created by the TFAC for the sector. The Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, I want to point out in this regard that the SIFSA, which has been established by the DAC, has been rejected by the vast majority of our sector on the premise that, and we call on the city committee to fully understand this, that our rejection of SIFSA is largely because of their lack of accountability for public funds which they have received from the DAC, and for which, since the existence, they have not provided a single audited report. And we call on the Select Committee to institute an investigation into DAC's continued funding of SIFSA, despite SIFSA's dismal record for a lack of accountability of public funds. With that, I leave you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will now move over to Paul Kokong.
Good afternoon, honourable members of the Select Committee, the DG and colleagues from the department. As stated, my name is Karabo Kokong. I'm a theatre producer based in Mahikeng, Northwest Province. I am the chairperson of for the Arts and Industry Lobbying Movement of the Artists, which was initiated by the Oplasena Ms. Yvonne Kilongoma on Facebook in January 2020. We are now a formalized constitutional organization with over 1,000 registered individual members and sitting over 18,000 members on Facebook. I'm also a member of the Theatre and Dance Employers Association, TAEA, an organization initiated by the heads of the Dexter Theatre and Magnus Theatre, respectively, during this COVID-19 era and out of a dire need to ensure the sustainability of the ecosystem of the theatre and dance sector in South Africa. This association now has representatives across the country. I'm aware, Chairperson, that one doesn't have much time allocated, so I'll try to be as quick as possible, as also my colleagues will also touch on other matters which I intended to touch on. I think it's safe to say, honourable members, that the underlying big picture of the creative industry is the biggest challenge our sector is facing. The challenge of having a custodian that does not listen to us, the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. The fact that in recent months, artists have taken to the streets to protest against the department is indeed telling of how frustrated the sector is. From the Devon-based artist march, to the National March at UN buildings in Pretoria, one common cry there was for the relief beyond the funds. We need our voices to be heard. It is no secret, colleagues, that many artists couldn't access the artist relief fund due to many restrictions set out as criteria by the department. Many organizations, including Amphor the Arts and TDEA, have on numerous occasions tried to call upon the department to acknowledge that ours is of a big economic structure, and therefore many artists could not or would not have the required documents like your proof of income, tax clearance certificates, and all the other difficult documents to acquire, more especially during the different levels of the national lockdown. The CDAA, as an example, has proposed that the department work through the employers to reach thousands of artists we had employed over the past 36 months, I think, but this too fell on deaf ears. This would have minimized all the red tape, as most employers are more compliant than the individual freelancers we have populating our sector. There's a relatively new but systemic movement of the activists under the arms of the six newly elected provincial reps across the country. Who, when given a chance, would come here and tell you how much artists are suffering on the ground. Even after going and pains to highlight the unhealthiness that the sector has or the structure that my colleague is wearing, referred to FESA, which has failed to account for all the public money spent on it. The department and various provincial Department of Agriculture for that matter wants to force us into a marriage. We are here, honorable members, crying out for help, asking you to know that there's a growing dissonance and distrust between the DCSC and the theater and drama sector, which we believe has resulted from the department's failure and effective communication, poor administration, and the dismal understanding of the dynamics of this sector. Now, before I hand over to my colleague Daniel Galloway to lead you through his presentation, I would just like to reiterate that, colleagues, indeed our sector is on its knees, honorable members. More artists are now calling for more resistance than protests, and therefore your intervention as the select committee would be most appreciated. I do not want to waste more time, like I said, other colleagues will touch to depth other points that we will want to raise. I'd like to pause here for now. Thank you. Daniel?
Thank you very much, Karabo. Good afternoon, honourable chairperson, honourable members of the Select Committee and my fellow industry professionals. Thank you for inviting me for my input at this meeting as it relates specifically to the independent theatre sector, using the Tugard Theatre as a specific example. My name is Daniel Galloway, and for the past 10 years I've been the Managing Director and Producer of the Tugard Theatre in Cape Town, a fully independent theatre funded single-handedly by the founding producer and philanthropist, Mr. Eric Abraham. At the independent theatre, the Tugard, despite its best efforts over the decade, received no other form of funding, subsidy or grant. After almost 10 years at the helm, I decided for reasons towards better sustainability for the theatre to step away from the Tugard as its full-time MD in January of this year. Sadly, one of the very first consultancy efforts I executed was to help the Tugard Theatre management work out how to best respond to the pandemic, which has had devastating consequences not only in our communities, but within the theatre and arts sector specifically. Independent theatres, of which there are several in South Africa, while differing from organization to organization, by definition are independent. They are free from cluttered councils, mismatched boards, and unnecessary committees. The result, most often, is a good measure of creative autonomy and creative freedom, all of which leads to the potential for creative excellence and the creation of meaningful job creation. The Tugard Theatre, as an example of one of several excellent independent theatres in South Africa, has very sadly, and as a direct result of the pandemic and the complete lack of any meaningful, supportive response locally, had to make the brutal decision to mothball indefinitely. This has resulted in the immediate closure of the theatre, the ceasing of all its operations, the retrenchment of 22 full-time staff members, and the loss of hundreds of part-time, contract, and fixed-term employment positions on a yearly basis. As an independent theatre, the Tugard employs hundreds of people per annum through its operations and various productions. Positioned in the inner city of Cape Town, the very establishment of the Tugard brought plenty more business in over the years. When the Tugard was first opened in 2010, there was barely a handful of retail, residential and commercial enterprises in the immediate 3 kilometre radius. Over the following decades, dozens of businesses, creating hundreds of jobs, opened and flourished in the immediate and surrounding areas. Over a relatively short period of time, the Tugard grew to be one of the premier theatre destinations in South Africa, with an annual footfall of some 150,000 visitors, including high turnovers during the so-called tourism season, and a reputation of producing world-class work almost exclusively, employing and showcasing only South African talent. The independent business of the Tugard soon gained a much admired reputation both locally and abroad, which in turn
directly brought positive international investment into co-productions initiated by the FIBA. Much, if not all, of the success of this independent theatre is thanks to the gigantic financial efforts of one person. Mr. Eric Abraham was not only determined to create a theatre space which recognizes and celebrates a remarkable South African and arguably one of our greatest playwrights, Mr. Ethel Fugard. But Mr. Abraham also wanted to create a space which reflects and celebrates a shared common humanity so desperately needed in these increasingly divisive times, not only in South Africa, but around the world. Mr. Abraham's efforts ran into not only the tens of millions, but quite literally the hundreds of millions of rand. These efforts being totally philanthropic, with never a cent being reduced to him over the last decade to reimburse him financially. At the time of closure, Mr. Abraham had spent over 210 million rand to support the efforts of the FIBA Theatre, which contributed directly to the remarkable and diverse cultural landscape of South Africa, his birth country. Additionally, the FIBA Theatre paid millions of rands over the last decade to the receiver of revenue. I'm somewhat laboring this point to illustrate what has been lost owing to the complete lack of supportive regulations or subsidy in the example of this particular independent theatre. We, all South Africans, have lost the efforts of one individual who chose to use his affluence on the efforts of enabling thousands of South African theatre makers, from actors and artists to musicians, designers, creators, writers, builders, technicians, and so on. His efforts put money in their pockets where meaningful employment opportunities in South Africa, in the South African theatre industry, are so very limited. The Fugard Theatre, as an example of an independent establishment in South Africa, relies firstly on the commitment of Mr. Abraham, but also on the ability to trade at the potential of 100% capacity. The business of theatre is tough enough as it is, with brutally tight margins at the best of times, greatly exploited when not enough people attend the production season. There is truly little chance for an independent theatre to break even or even reach any measure of financial sustainability without the support of sponsorship, donations, grants or funding. This is especially the case in South Africa, where we as independent theatres cannot charge anything remotely close to an appropriate admission ticket price, despite our productions giving our international counterparts a serious run for their money. The current COVID-19 protocol for operating theatre under the current lockdown level are so restrictive that for independent theatres and producers, it is utterly impossible to trade meaningfully. There is simply no realistic or practical option of success. It's a loss-loss business, and the job losses are starting to run into their thousands. Without meaningful financial support, critical stimulus packages, and revised protocols of operation at these times, more independent spaces and others in South Africa, like the Fugard, will simply shut down. They will have no other choice. And sadly, more investors, like Mr. Abraham, will be lost. We need meaningful support, and we need efficiency. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Daniel. I would like to now speak on the independent producers and their contributions. The sprawling dance and theatre sector is made up of a complex network of contributors who are all interdependent to coexist. And it's become very clear that there is a growing dissonance between the funded theatres in South Africa and the non-funded theatres. There seems to be no relationship between these two, unfortunately. And we have to find a way for forging meaningful relationships between these two entities. And my second point is South African dance and theatre sector relies heavily on independent producers to provide theatrical venues with a wide range of content. A recent study showed that our sector consists more than 75% of independent producers and independent contractors. That is a massive chunk of our sector. All of these people were left unbelievably vulnerable with the COVID pandemic and with nowhere to go. my third point, as such, independent producers are central to job creation in the sector, not only for the artist, but for their whole associated value chain. There are only a handful of people on stage that get seen, but what very often gets left behind is the fact that there is a whole value chain, people who supply technical equipment, publicists, graphic designers, security staff. There are loads of people involved in this value chain, and unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, all of these people were left vulnerable and had nowhere to turn to. They have forged their careers and invested time in crafting these careers, and all of a sudden, they were completely vulnerable. And then my fourth point, at current there is no regulatory framework in place to protect these vulnerable freelancers or production houses. Absolutely no framework exists. What do we do with independent producers, independent venues, independent contract workers when a pandemic hits? Our sector is unbelievably vulnerable to these things, and there was no plan in place that addressed this. On the next point, due to the limited profit margins that the sector offers, productions are often scheduled to overlap, producing multiple projects at the same time. The overall business approach is that not a per-project approach, but a holistic producing strategy, which renders project-based funding irrelevant, as it is not a sustainable source of funding for independent producers in the long run. This is a massive problem for our industry, because all the relief funding that has been made available is all project-based, and going forward, this is not a sustainable way to look at our industry, and we have to find new models and new ways of sustaining the independent producers, theatres, and people who work in the industry in order to sustain it and keep it going. Despite several attempts and proposals to collaborate with state-funded theatres, VR Theatrical and other independent producers have never received any support, financial or infrastructurally, from any state-funded theatre, and as such, there is no working relationship between these entities, and this is another big problem that needs addressing. The state-funded theatres, if they could be turned into hubs into which independent producers can feed to generate work, that would be a sustainable model. But unfortunately, the independent sector and the funded theatres are functioning completely separately, and we need to address this in order to really relook at our sector. As a case study, VR Theatrical, our company has a 5 million rand a year turnover, and we employ on average 150 independent contractors per year. Unfortunately, due to the lockdown, all our future productions were cancelled for this year, and it's now been 8 months where we have had absolutely no income stream, no salary, and no way of staying alive. In April of 2020, VR Theatrical applied to the DSAC for a grant and was granted 20,000 rand in April of 2020. Unfortunately, as you can see, 20,000 rand cannot sustain a company of this size. Are there no better ways of structuring this stimulus package in order to actually inject cash where jobs can be created and create a sustainable model? That's my question. Thank you so much. I now hand over back to Ishmael Mohammed.
Thank you very much, Taplut. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And members of the committee. I wish to draw your attention that prior to 1994, the National Arts Festival in Makunda was the major arts festival in South Africa. It has a 44-year legacy and Standard Bank as its longest and its primary sponsor. Now, apart from the festival's enormous legacy for developing the art in South Africa, the festival also contributes 98 million rands to the GDP of Makunda and 360 million rands to the GDP of the Eastern Cape Province. Post-1994,
we have seen several more festivals developing in small towns with the support from the corporate sector, and particularly in this case from Absa Bank. And while these festivals have been creating employment opportunities for artists, its indirect benefit has already been for the towns that have benefited from the GDP that stays behind from a festival economy. The Center for the Creative Arts at the University of KwaZulu-Natal has presented four annual festivals for more than two decades. The Time of the Writer Festival is a literary festival that takes place every March. The Durban International Film Festival takes place in July, the Jumbo Dance Festival in August, and the Poetry Africa Festival ended last week. Now, this year's Time of the Writer Festival was scheduled to commence on the very same day that the national lockdown was announced by President Cyril Ramaphosa. The festival shut down immediately. It was the very first South African festival to go online on the very next day after the international lockdown was announced. And since then, every other major arts festival in South Africa has also gone online. Now, apart from artists losing their income as a result of the cancellation of the festivals, it really is the towns in which these festivals are located that have also lost a significant GDP that is a spin-off as a result of the cancellation of the festival. In a city like Makhanda, which has an unemployment rate of 63%, the annual festival is a major source of income not only for artists, but also for the temporary provision, job provision for workers and local citizens who at most are unemployed during the year. The cancellation of the festival has also left all the casual employees who are dependent on the festival without any source of income. And these are not necessarily actors. These are cleaners who work in festival venues. They are stage hands. They are people who do sets and assist stage managers. Many of these casual employees are amongst the poorest of the poor in the arts sector, and none of them have been able to qualify for the Arts Relief Fund. We have literally betrayed the poorest of the poor in our arts sector, who literally keep the cultural identity and legacy of our country alive. Mr. Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, while the festivals across our country have responded innovatively to the challenges of COVID-19 and have gone online to sustain the brand awareness and to create some form of economic opportunity for artists, the financial returns from online festivals is almost negligible. And artists had to be subsidized by the festivals, who automatically had to move into this mode of operation. There was no additional support from the Arts Relief Fund delivered to festivals who suddenly needed to transition onto an online platform. And it's not just because you have a little IT guy in your office who can suddenly turn things and make it online. There is a specific system that is required for online live streaming of the performing arts. While live festivals have provided a dynamic opportunity for the disadvantaged community to access the festivals, it has always been through the free ticketing schemes that festival producers have introduced at festivals across the country. These very same communities who are indigenous communities who do not have access for tickets and have been accessing the arts have now been denied access to the arts because online festivals could not access those particular audience due to the high cost of data. And because absolutely no provision was made to support festivals to be able to reach out to these indigenous audiences through provision of data or whatever, a sector of our society has literally been even more marginalized than what they've ever been before in terms of accessing the arts. We call on the Select Committee to note that whilst many festivals have moved online, the sustainability of presenting online festivals, the growing of equitable audiences for online festivals, the generation of content for online festivals and the advancement of festivals in the fourth industrial revolution must become an integral part of an economic recovery strategy for the sector. And it cannot be done by a bureaucracy without the engagement with professionals in the festival sector. It has to be done with their knowledge, with their expertise, and with their skills. We also call on the Select Committee to note the growing dissonance and distrust between the DAC and the theatre and dance sector, as well as the festival sector, much of which my colleagues have already alluded to, and which have resulted from the DAC's failure at effective communication, poor administration, lack of accountability by several of its officials, a dismal understanding of the dynamics of the sector and how it impacts on the planning and the execution of a growing of South African festivals to assume the same gravitas as any other international arts festival across the globe. Mr. Honourable Chairperson, I wish to also draw an example of the frustrating inefficiency, incompetency and inconsistency that prevails at the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. While the country was in a state of level 4 lockdown, and whilst employees across the country were regulated by the state, and I repeat that, were regulated by the state to work from home, the DAC officials insisted that all grant contracts must be physically signed and be physically delivered to its offices. I will repeat that again. While society was regulated by the state to work from home, the DAC officials insisted that all grant contracts must be physically signed by signatories and be physically delivered to its offices. The DAC officials refused to accept any electronic copies, despite explanation that employees working from home, as per government's national lockdown regulations, and that in some cases, that it would be a risk to take a hard copy document from one person to another person, considering that this would pose a risk to signatories with comorbidities, was simply dismissed and ignored by this bureaucracy that we have. Nevertheless, the Center for the Creative Arts at the University of KwaZulu-Natal complied. We sent an employee and risked that employee's health to go from one home to another home and to the homes of the registrar, who is over 60, to get the documents signed and to be returned to the DAC on time. Since July, the Center has not received the contracted funding. Inquiries to the DAC have led to feeble excuses of officials passing the responsibility from one official to another official. Finally, after 4 attempts at following up with the official and with absolutely no responses and not even an acknowledgement of an email, the matter was referred yesterday to the Office of the Director General and we received an acknowledgement that Dr. Cynthia Kumalo will be looking into it through her office. We are now awaiting a response. The Center for the Creative Arts, I wish to point out, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Committee, is not the only art institution that has experienced this high level of incompetence from the DAC officials. It is the norm in the art sector that it is a norm in the art sector. It has become accustomed to receiving this kind of shoddy service from the DAC. There are several testimonies by artists across the spectrum on social media pages condemning the inefficiency of the department. We call on the Honourable Select Committee to note that in order for festivals to become economically viable and attractive to international audiences and to international producers who import South African productions for their festivals, local festivals cannot afford to be held hostage by DAC officials who wield such unnecessary power of ignoring correspondences, not engaging, or simply not doing their jobs. We call on the Select Committee to recognize the contribution of festivals to South Africa's economy, social development, promotion of cultural identity, and the advancement of the rights of freedom of expression and freedom of creativity, which are constitutional values and which are most celebrated in no other place other than at festivals. Further, we call on the Select Committee to note the impact of COVID-19 on the presentation of live festivals, and that whilst many festivals have moved online, the sustainability of presenting online festivals, the growing of equitable audiences for online festivals, the generation of content for online festivals, and the advancement of festivals in the fourth industrial revolution must also become an integral part of an economic recovery strategy to address the growing unemployment, growing disillusionment, and the increasing threat to career development in the creative and the cultural industries. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We will now move to output from the Baxter Theatre.
Good afternoon, honourable members. Thank
good afternoon.
Thank you for allowing us this time. And good afternoon to all my colleagues in the theatre dance community. I have to say that in response to all the speakers thus far, all of whom I agree with wholeheartedly, I understand that this must be a barrage of information. And I think it's really because our sector hasn't been heard for so many years. And perhaps this can be the start of a communication where we feel heard and that it's not just businesses that are subsidized by the department that get a hearing, but that all of us, the whole sector, and essentially the heartbeat of the sector, which are independent producers, NPOs, NGOs, university theatres, get this opportunity on an ongoing basis to be heard by the department and by Parliament. I'm here to talk about professional theatres on university grounds, and I think that this could possibly be a solution to a number of our issues that have been brought up today, essentially in terms of making space available to artists and also having theatres which are supported by the infrastructure of the university and HR departments, IT departments, etc., which might essentially save funding in the long run. I'm speaking on behalf of the Theatre Dance Employers Association, South Africa, as well as the Baxter Theatre at the University of Cape Town. To give you some background to the Baxter Theatre, I don't want to only be promoting the Baxter Theatre here. I'm speaking on behalf of all university theatres. But to give you a sense of what is possible from a university theatre, I'd like to fill you in a little bit about the nature of the Baxter Theatre. To quote John Carney on our 40th birthday, the Baxter Theatre opened its doors during the most difficult time of our history in our country. There were no theatres in Cape Town in the 1980s that would take the risk of presenting works by black artists. The Baxter Theatre became the only theatre that allowed the alternative voice to be heard, especially from black communities. Because of the Baxter Theatre's fortunate location, situated inside the grounds of the University of Cape Town, they could present and produce so-called protest plays, both Cesar Bonzi's Dead and the Island, played for many seasons at the Baxter Theatre to all the surrounding communities of the Western Cape. The Baxter Theatre created the Exchange Corridor with other main theatres in South Africa. The Baxter remains a cultural icon and one of the most accessible and inclusive theatres in the country, thriving on indigenous talent and creating uniquely South African productions by incorporating a wide variety of performing arts and catering to audiences that reflect all the demographics of South Africa. While over 500,000 patrons attend over 2,700 performances annually, making it one of the busiest independent theatres in Africa. And I say independent, although we are semi-independent theatre, because just under 30% of our budget, of our operational budget, is paid for by the University of Cape Town. So BAFTA produces world-class South African productions, which have won both acclaim and awards nationally and internationally, establishing itself as a leading producer of South African theatre. Over the past 5 years, the BAFTA Theatre Centre has received 78 nominations and City Awards for its productions across the globe, including two prestigious Top 10 First Awards at the Edinburgh Festival, the Ellen Hayes Award for Outstanding Visiting Production. New work has travelled, new South African work by South African writers, has travelled to 9 countries and 14 cities in the past 5 years, including internationally famous Judy, Solomon and Marion, John Carney's Missing, as a production of The Fall. 6,500 senior citizens attend the Senior Citizen Program, Winning Melanies, per annum, and the Zabalaza Development and Outreach Program has consistently demonstrated over the past 11 years that programs that serve as incubators and resource nodes for capacity development have the ability to change the face of an industry. Over 7,000 audience members attended 41 productions in only 10 days during the Zabalaza main festival in 2020, just before the lockdown. 703 young theatre makers were afforded the opportunity to attend workshops in 2019 and 20, where effective and sustainable skills and employability are developed as part of the annual Zabalaza Development and Outreach Program. I want to now move on to theatres on university campuses as a whole. We need to recognize that theatres on university campuses are important sites for the generation of employment for graduates of the university and other graduates of organizations, NPOs and NGOs, which develop young artists and professionals. We need to acknowledge that these theatres play a vital role in the generation of new content, new young audiences, and the intellectualization of the arts. Indeed, artists working at these theatres are easily able to draw on the intellectual capacity of the university, and strong mentors are easily accessible. Theatres in these surrounds develop content which challenges the status quo and which ask important socio-political questions. Currently relevant themes around decolonization, whiteness, anti-racism, gender-based violence, and the environment, which are discussed in lecture halls, find their way onto stages of university-based theatres and are shared with thousands of audience members. These theatres provide work opportunities to young artists and graduates and to students who need part-time work. The economic, social, and educational role of these theatres cannot continue to go unsubsidized and must be included in the economic recovery and stimulus plan. The BAFTA Theatre has a staff complement of 70 full-time employees and 65 part-time employees, whom we've had to keep on salary through COVID. This has been near to impossible. We have struggled on every level in terms of fundraising and other means to keep our staff employed. And we are still in a position where we are able to pay these salaries, but we are really coming to the end of all our resources. We applied for funding in April. We were turned down by the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. We have a budget of 30 million rand a year for operational expenses and salaries. Even had we received the 20,000 rand from the department, it would have been meaningless. We received all of 10,000 rand from Western Cape government for the entire theatre. And not only did we only receive 10,000 rand, but our Zabalaza funding for next year 2021 was cut by the Western Province Arts and Culture Fund by 25% because they had paid out in COVID relief. We're really sitting in a situation which is pretty dire. And as you know, other theatres in Cape Town, as Daniel mentioned, the Fugard Theatre has closed down. We've managed to stay open. We're open at the moment to 50% capacity, which is really problematic. Not only because we can't break even at 50%, but obviously it is very difficult to get 50% of audiences to the theatre because there is still fear around getting the virus. So our theatre seats a capacity between our five theatre seats, 1,600 seats in our theatre, and we're not going to be getting 800 people a night because essentially people are scared of coming out and contracting a virus. So we're really looking, we're really in a very tight situation, and as I've said, we've not been able to apply, we've not received any COVID relief to keep our staff on salaries. I wanted to refer to an example of one of our productions which was created with university graduates. This was a production called The Fall, which came out of the Fallist Movement on the university campus, and we commissioned six of those graduates who had taken part in the decolonization movement on campus in their final year. We commissioned them to do a play about the experiences around the fall, and that production became one of our biggest successes, in fact, one of our biggest successes in the last probably 15 years alongside Miss Julie. It played to thousands of young audiences around the country and in Cape Town, and it went to the Edinburgh Festival where it won a Fringe First and was then invited to several countries around the world. I'm mentioning this production because it was an attempt from our side to provide young graduates the opportunity to A, get work and be employed, and B, to take what they had learned from a university environment and create that into a theatrical production. Universities have this ability to bring together young people and relevant, crucial subject matter and create new South African work and to create new audiences and excitement and, of course, contribute to South African branding. I would like to say that I believe that university-based theatres are possibly the way forward in terms of hosting young companies, and I know that this is the only way, really, for us to go forward, and that would be to have young companies aligned, not only young companies, but companies of artists aligned to all the state theatres as well as to some of the independent theatres and university theatres, and in this way provide employment on an ongoing basis to young companies where they can develop their skills and develop their work. This is part of the new white paper, and we'll mention it later when we speak about the white paper, but it's certainly something that we see as a possibility and a solution in terms of going forward. Finally, I would like to ask, on behalf of all artists, I believe, for some kind of audit around the COVID relief funding that the government allocated to the art sector. We have not been in a position to see, or it's not been made available to us, and we are concerned in terms of where all the funding has gone. And with that, I'll hand over to my colleagues.
Thank you, Laura. I would like to just bring the attention more into dance as something that I live for. This year marks my 8 years in dance, and 21 years ago, I created Wally Dance Theatre as an independent dance company for black young dancers to know that they have a space where their dreams of being a dancer can be realized. It is from that premise that I continue to fight for the sustainability of the organization, even in these precarious times. As I know that the dancers' livelihood is dependent on the existence of such companies. During lockdown, dance demonstrated its power to heal and unite people around the globe. It provided the much needed wellness and a moment to breathe when artists were feeling very vulnerable. Many of us formulated our careers in our backyards in the 80s, in the heart of apartheid South Africa, experimenting with movement filled with dust and smoke that was emanating from burning tires and tear gas, while dodging rubber bullets and chased by police dogs. In 2020, in our democracy, artists are still marching for their right to exist, to dance even if it means repeating the territory beyond the Rainbow Nation euphoria, to challenge the Department of Sport, Art and Culture to rethink and envision a model that will best serve the artist. What lies between possibilities and contradictions, between life and death, between rich and poor, between hell and earth is a dancer. Dancers are custodians of a nation's traditions and cultures, and in most cases, a mouthpiece for the marginalized. Much of dance created by independent artists and companies is a direct response to human values and raising questions, creating a discourse and demonstrating clearly that our need for each other is fundamental and that a need for government support is critical. Ironically, during lockdown, dance dominated our screens and social media platforms, brought monks and nuns out of their monasteries to dance to Master KG's hit song, Jerusalem, responding to the widespread hashtag Jerusalem Dance Challenge. International Dance Day 2020, a global celebration of dance created by the Dance Committee of the International Theatre Institute in partnership with UNESCO, and is marked annually on the 29th of April. This year, it placed a spotlight on South Africa by selecting me as the author for a dance message that was translated in different languages and responded to by dancers and dance companies around the globe, with dance videos gaining an overwhelming response and global success. It is dance we're living on, even in this extraordinary chaos and disruptive period in our lives. We already know that it is our sector that we continue to suffer, as the last 26 years have demonstrated that even without COVID-19, the arts fraternity have always had to fight for scraps, placed at the bottom of the chain with the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture without a clear indication and plan as to how the sector will benefit from the much-needed economic stimulus package. It is particularly disappointing, Chair, given South African dance international success, the recognition in the unique dance style and courage, that our dance is still not valued at home. What is critical as a matter of urgency is a creative stimulus plan for the cultural creative economy that will get artists, theatres, cultural spaces and festivals buzzing with solid programs to keep the arts fraternity alive. We are a dancing nation. The power in the dance acknowledges many centuries of collective efforts, and that is something worth fighting for. The territory is a dance of emancipation, at least in its intention. It's not enough. We need, as a matter of urgency, a vision towards nurturing, supporting, and sustaining the arts and artists. The dependence of contemporary dance on international donor community for support has given many dancers a lifeline, and we know that it is not sustainable without support from our government. Already the question that is asked by international donors is, what is your country doing to support your art? Often the answer is nothing. At the very least, very little. International touring has kept many companies and independent dancers and choreographers alive, creating jobs and contributing to the creative economy. The closure of borders impacted negatively on many dance urban companies, and most were forced to close down. The lack of government support for dance festivals contributed to the demise of platforms where dancers were able to demonstrate their creativity and development. One such festival is the Dance Umbrella, which was important not only for South Africans, but for the continent. We are asking our government to recognize the contribution of South African contemporary dance sector to the economy and its strong international reputation. We call on the Select Committee to note that South Africa's leading dance festival, Dance Umbrella, which has launched the international careers of all of South Africa's leading choreographers and dancers, has collapsed due to unsustainable funding. We call on the Select Committee to note that the funding of a national contemporary dance festival and the re-entry of South Africa's contemporary dance sector into the international arena must be a strategic aspect of the economic recovery and stimulus plan for the sector. I would like now to hand over to Petronel Bard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing us, especially when you're not feeling well. I wish you leadership. Honourable Ministers, I'm to speak onto the nature of cash rate and assess the opportunity of entrepreneurship it presents, but its impact on the South African economy. The effects of COVID-19 on this type of entrepreneurship and peer theatre, that is my initiative as a case study. It is a wonderful thing that South African theatre practitioners and entrepreneurs are gathering forces to form a united front and put us in a better position than ever before to work with government. And for this conversation, I just quickly want to shift the focus to the very practical option of theatre cafe culture, especially in our rural areas. In every town of our country, there are spaces that could be converted to pop-up theatres. It is an opportunity of entrepreneurship and community development like no other, especially in a time when larger gatherings are ended. It creates the opportunity for communities to engage, very needed, to uplift the local artists, technicians and creative workforces, and presents opportunities for our professional artists to assist and help design these spaces. It is a culture that countries like India have long since implemented with great success, and there are a few examples in South Africa like Big Big Aces, Ibiza Beron, and smaller festivals, the Voorkamer Festival that it initiated. In a country full of creative diversity, this is something we should investigate and capitalize on. The effect of COVID-19 has been severe on the sector because restaurants are, in truth, the most commonly used spaces when touring the country, and most of them have been unable to operate many closed down. But it presents us with a unique opportunity now to develop new spaces like these, not only as restaurants, but also as theatre spaces. Development like this makes sense because you do not need to build new structures per se, but by employing the expertise in our creative sector, just to adapt standing spaces to theatres that could host a wide variety of genres from dance, music, to theatre and poetry. It also creates platforms for art and crafts to be sold, for education, for our chefs, waiters, interior decorators. The list of upliftment is quite endless. In the process, we also give chance for local businesses to sell their produce, stimulating home industry, and that without the costs of very expensive buildings or infrastructure. It comes from the people, for the people, with some well-thought-out help from our side. It is, after all, in the art that we most effectively celebrate our diversity, more so perhaps than any other field, and I know this from the very practical side of being directly involved in a cultural forum in Mossel Bay, where I hail from. It was when I got involved with MOCA, Mossel Bay Creative Cultures Association, that I really connected with different art forms and practitioners from all over, more than just the Afrikaans cabaret scene that I come from. I know my colleagues will elaborate more on cultural forums and such, but I do want to strongly advise that these kind of initiatives are helped with legislation in the administration and application for funding. As a young artist, I literally found 1, 2, 3, 4 for numbers in terms of restaurants to perform, looking for platforms, so much that at some point 1, 2, 3 found me to form part of this survey for them. From this, GOC's development was born, under which I am chair of MOCA, part of the WCCC, involved like initiatives still once, COVID and beyond, originating from the Foxwood Theatre in Houghton, intending to uplift rural areas through various platforms
and I form part of the Garden Route Film Commission. The sector of the industry needs the help. Many artists would not have been able to apply for funding, for instance, not working with contracts. They need the thinkers, especially people of integrity, to work with government and organize our sector of the art industry. I will always impart my experience here because I had to create something out of nothing so I can help young talented minds with it back to the wall. Before I hand over to Yvette and Ismail to talk more on NGO, CBO and PRP and the informal sector, let me summarize. Please note, the Cafe Theatres, pop-up theatre and independent theatre companies in southern South Africa, particularly in townships and rural communities that have no proper theatre infrastructures, have emerged and been initiated by NGOs and independent entrepreneurs over the past numbers of years to advance entrepreneurship and innovation. And that the national lockdown has decimated most of these companies and hence the support for established and well-run scale theatre spaces in townships, rural and developing communities with a track record for artistic innovation, job creation and social development and must be supported by the economic recovery and stimulus plan. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to be very brief on community art.
Yes.
I think if you talk more about it. Community art centres have been in existence in South Africa since time immemorial, and they played an incredibly important role in the past decades. They've been used as a focal point to mobilise, to educate and to raise issues of the plight of the community. In the past, the centres have also been used a lot of leaders and practitioners who are not just leaders in the creative industry, but who through engagement in community art sectors have become leaders in other sectors of our society. The apartheid government did not support community art sectors. And as a result of them, many of them struggled. Those who stayed open did so because of the support of the international donor community that was supporting them in the fight against apartheid. The impact of community sectors reflects in various areas of our socio-economic development of our communities. We see our community, our centers work around issues of gender, around issues of drugs, around issues of teenage pregnancies. Each of these issues are dealt with through our community, our centers. Now, since 1994, the Community Arts Development Policy was developed by the National Department of Arts and Culture. But we are still, 26 years later, still waiting to see those policies fully implemented and provide a clear, sustainable investment program for community arts centers. The national, provincial, or local government level, our community centers achieving what they ought to have been doing. But what is most difficult to swallow, Mr. Chairperson, is the following, is that community art centers, which used to run efficiently and effectively, and community art centers, which are well known internationally for their struggle and their fight in the legacy against apartheid, no longer exist. Centers that have been part of our political and cultural legacy, to a lack of funding, have been forced to close in a new South Africa. And I'm referring to the Federated Union of Black Artists in Newtown. I'm referring to the Soweto Institute of African Theatre, the Mamelodi Theatre, the Cape Arts Project, the Maluti Theatre, the Olive Tree Theatre, the Station Theatre, and I could continue naming so many more of these community art centres that started off with a people's struggle that was committed to anti-apartheid legacies. And this government, through its inner efficiency, has literally driven all these institutions into non-existence. Now we need to note, Mr. Chairperson, that the closing down of these historical community centres is not only an indication of the DAC's incompetence, but it is an erasure. It is an erasure of an important part of our political memory and our political legacy in South Africa. And we call on this Honourable Select Committee to ensure that the DAC delivers to the poorest of our poor cultural workers in our society, whose livelihood and careers is dependent on how well these community art centres are run.
It requires effective policy and government and governance, not just in theory and on paper, but to be implemented. It requires direct transformation through investment of skills and the furthering of education. It requires funding and financing. It requires provision of social security at these community centers. It needs to provide local marketing development opportunities for the centers, and it needs to take these community centers into a space and innovation. And to return to the question of COVID-19, it will require support to make these heavily neglected community centers safe. Communities can mobilize, celebrate the arts, and continue to use the arts for social and political agents. I hand over to Yvette.
Thank you, Ishmael. And I pick up on your last comment there about the deep inequalities that our country faces and still faces 26 years into our democracy. The inequalities that extend to infrastructure, to resources and skills, to income, across the board. And because of these inequalities, we absolutely cannot have a one-size-fits-all approach, and that is what we have been seeing in the so-called solutions that we've seen in response to the pandemic at this time. Our policies and our practices and our relief programs need to take account of those who on the one hand might have resources and income, and those on the other don't. And at the moment, our policies seem to be informed by a creative and cultural industries approach, an approach that was designed by the Global North, essentially for an industry that has a market, and where those with resources can access creative products. And this approach completely excludes the majority who were already excluded under apartheid. So we have to have a new vision for the future. We have to have a vision for the future that takes into account human development, social development, economic development, educational development. It needs to be very specifically targeted. We need to make sure that we have training centers, flagship centers in every province. And this does not mean spending all the millions of rand on infrastructure. Rather, it means putting the money into the people who need to run these places, who need to produce the arts. In the revised white paper, which will be spoken to in a moment, there are a lot of very important and practical suggestions as to how this can happen. One of these is the idea of 30 companies of 8 to 12 members being supported with average subsidies of around 3.5 million, which is in stark contrast to the huge amounts that are spent at this time on the 5 theatres that are take up our public spaces. So we would ask that the department really look to start implementing those parts of the white paper that they can do at this time without necessarily having to go through legislative processes. And we also ask that consideration is given to training and education on the ground. At the moment, as you've heard from various people, there is a brain drain that happens within the arts. And everybody flocks to the two or maybe three centres where it is possible to earn some kind of living. We cannot have that in the future for South Africa. We need an equitable future for every artist, wherever they happen to live in this country. And every child and young person, every adult in our country needs to have access to the arts wherever they are. That is the vision that we want to work together towards, and we believe that it is possible, and we as the sector are here to work with the department to make that happen. And as Ishmael referred to at the end of his presentation also, the need for social benefits is really strong. We need to have a regulated industry. We need to have social benefits for our industry. We have waited 26 years for these things. We cannot wait any longer. So with that, I'm going to pass on to back to Ishmael and to Lara to speak to the white paper very briefly.
Ishmael, please unmute your microphone. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Honourable Chair, I'm going to be very brief about what I need to say about the white paper. Is that when submissions were called for the white paper, I made a submission, and 98% of what I suggested for the revision of theaters in South Africa so that they could be driven economically smart has been included in the white paper. Now, for that, I applaud the DAC. I really do. I applaud the DAC for having listened, for having taken that into consideration. But what I wish to highlight is that I do understand that the implementation of the white paper is a long process, and we respect that process, and we understand that it needs to go through the various mechanisms that it needs to go to. But there are two components to that white paper. The one is the legislative framework that will require legislation changes around the Cultural Institutions Act and how cultural institutions function and how the funding agencies function. But the other part of the white paper is practical implementation, which is visionary, which is smart, and which places the theatre sector in a viable economy that could become self-growing. And for that, one does not require to wait for legislative processes. It simply means that the DAC needs to be smart, recognize that, isolate that, and use that for immediate implementation. And I will leave it at that.
I decided to give you more time to make your presentations because it happens rarely that you get this kind of opportunity where we meet with artists, you know, theatre workers, and their representative organizations. So I'll give you more time, and then I'll try to manage the question of answers and questions as we move forward. This meeting is supposed to end at 17 hours, and some of our members have meetings at 6, the state and standing committee around that time. I'll give over to you at least this time, just be as brief as best as possible for those who are going to give input. We're listening to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to clear, I was told that this meeting only finishes at 6 o'clock. I just want to double check that.
Nontando?
Yes, Chair, the meeting finishes at 6.
Finishing at 6, but I'm saying there are people who will be attending from this meeting, they'll be attending another meeting at 6. So, as we share this time, we need to have that in mind also. My idea is to give more time to our guests, actually, and then we'll move it. Over to you.
If we could just give 3 minutes to the next speaker, then we can go on to the Q&A if that suits you.
No, you can all present according to, you know, your
we only have one speaker.
Okay, no, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Then we will move on to Lizani, who will wrap up, and then we will go to the Q&A. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Good afternoon, honorable members of this meeting. Thank you for the opportunity. I have been in this meeting to give account on our engagement with DSAC from the start. And just to give a little bit of a background from where I come from and why I'm involved in the communication. Being involved in tourism as well, my partner and I were part of the global impact that the pandemic had since December already because we saw the impact in tourism. And from the first South African case that was recorded, things escalated really quickly to the level of lockdown, and then we realized that digital communication platforms would have to be set up immediately to get the correct information to as many people as possible in a timely manner. And this is when we started setting up channels for communication. We realize that people in the creative sector will also no longer be able to work, and we need to know where to get assistance and information about this pandemic and about their current situation. So that is how I got involved in the art sector, as well as from my background. So the more we became involved in the communication, we were aware that it would not be possible to speak on behalf of creatives if we don't consult with them directly, and therefore we set up WhatsApp groups for different interest groups within the art sector to assist with relevant questions, answers, news and updates, and to engage the sector from grassroots to businesses and to organizations. Through these conversations, we soon also realized that the communication from BSAC is not really getting through to individual creatives and to applicants and people who need the money. And most people we're not even aware that there is a relief fund available, or that the deadline has moved, or any other information that got through. Now, we were aware of it because organizations made an effort to phone and find out and follow things. But the layman or the artist on the street and the artist that needed to know this did not know unless they were told by someone. So to bridge this gap, our organizations positioned ourselves to engage with BSAC directly in order to provide the necessary information through our WhatsApp groups that we started. We have about 1,000 people on our WhatsApp groups, and then more people within the tourism sector who happens also to be in the arts. Our engagement with the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture started out to be very fruitful and positive and two-way conversations, but as time went by, the engagement became more and more difficult. It became more difficult to sit down and actually talk about what it is that we would suggest or to be consulted. We have tried to motivate consultation with the sector before making a decision and or an announcement on any relief funds, so that we can assist in the process and get the money to those who urgently need it. As a result of this, there were three sector meetings throughout this entire year. On 6th of May, as you all know, so I'm just going to summarize it from our perspective. On the 6th of May, the meeting was to explain the first wave relief fund and how it is working and how it is evaluated in that meeting. On the 6th of August, we were called to ask to give input on the second wave relief fund. However, by this time, the relief fund was already drawn up, and all the organizations had absolutely one day to just give their input and their suggestions for a relief fund that was announced 2 days later. So we feel that that was not proper consultation, and that was too little time for us to say what the biggest issues were, and they were mentioned before in this meeting today, like tax, and Karabo has mentioned a lot of these challenges. The last meeting was on the 6th of October, which we will also discuss today, and that was to present the presidential economic stimulus program. With regard to the specific the theater and dance sector engagement, our first request to be included in any relief for theaters was sent by email on August 4th, which was acknowledged and replied to. Since then, we have engaged with BSAC on all levels, from email to phone calls to public Zoom meetings where a representative was sent, but there were never any conclusive answers given in these meetings or in any phone calls or emails. And since the 4th of August, we have requested 11 times on different announcements made by the President and the Minister to engage and assist in the recovery plan for our sector. Our latest request for a meeting was because we did not agree that the theatre and dance sector is catered for in the Presidential Economic Stimulus Program, and that there is confusion within the department on where the sector fits in, especially in terms of relief. When we asked in our last meeting the 6th of October, where we as the theatre and dance sector can go to find out how to apply, how to go about it, how to give input, we were referred to the NAC. And upon contacting NAC, we were referred back to the DSAC, and after numerous emails and engagements, we were now granted a meeting on Thursday, 22nd of October, which is after this meeting, naturally. So, as mentioned earlier, we are sitting here today because we have engaged on numerous levels with BFAC as well as with CIFSA, and it was not fruitful as there were no transparent communication on how public funds have been distributed and how they will be able, how CIFSA as on their own will be able also to assist in this dire time of dire need. We feel that neither BFAC or CIFSA understands the theatre and dance sector, nor are motivated to give it the proper attention to an economic recovery and sustainable growth plan. We have pushed for proper communication and offered to assist with proposals, databases, and anything that is required to expedite the process, but it has fallen on ears that seems to be not willing to listen. And a memorandum was even handed and delivered to the president in which the theatre and dance sector was addressed. And we need to start a recovery plan right now or we will lose our theatre sector as it is explained today. We call on a ministerial task team as the arts really stretches over different departments, as mentioned, to work with our sector, to come together and build a sector which can be the foundation to build brand South Africa. We can take our cultural, creative culture into the world, and we can be the foundation of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, for extending our presentation time. I do would like to request that we submit to you our recommendations in writing for your considerations. I did type them out, but I won't spend more time on this in order for us to get to questions and answers, which I'm sure you would like to get to. Would it be all right for us to submit our recommendations in writing?
Thank you very much. Let me welcome all the inputs made by the presenters, the artists, and that it hasn't happened in a very long time for me. And I think even for members of this committee, the select committee, to meet with artists, though in a virtual meeting like this one, it would have been nicer, to meet in under normal conditions or in like virtual feedback where we could sit down in one place and chat. You know, there is more in body language than what is said in the way. We all of us here must admit that this meeting is long overdue. We should have met long time ago. So as to chart the way forward, because you see the problem with the creative sector like yours is that people get involved in production as individuals in some instances. And of course it takes even more than that, more than one person as you go on. But in most cases it'll be individuals and small groups. And what we interact with as members of parliament, particularly as the select committee in the NCOP, we look at what is happening in provinces. How does this impact on the creative arts, the creative sector in Limpopo? How does it affect people in the, artists in the Eastern Cape and all the other provinces, province by province? And then with the National Assembly, they'll look at, the overarching issues that affect this, and actually been linked with, helping society, us as South Africans, to solve our own problems and chart our own way forward in terms of what kind of development do we need as a country. Where are we heading to? We know and we admit that not all politicians are artists. But at the same time, I know that very well that many artists are politicians, but not all artists are politicians. But many of them are politicians. They see things that we as normal people do not, what will take us an hour to explain. For people in this industry, it may take them 3 minutes to 10,000, that will take me 2 to 3 hours to explain. So we need to meet each other halfway. But more, we have an obligation as the government, for instance, to give support service and to make conditions conducive for people to be involved in production at that high level. And again, that we, there are spin-offs from these creative artists in terms of the amount of marketing that they do for this country, putting South Africa in the, on the international market. What is this that we are doing, for instance, to give them courage to continue doing that and help to build this country? The struggle to build a nation in South Africa. We usually don't say, what does it take to do that? What are the building materials that we need, and what are the kind of workers that we need to do that? We are meeting with them today. So I think what members will do after this is to ask questions, and then after that, the department will answer some of the questions. And we know that some of these questions cannot be answered in this meeting because of some information and statistics that might be needed. So I'll take this as the beginning of a long process of meetings, of your future meetings to come, where we as the committee can meet with your representatives, including the parastatals that are supposed to be giving support service to you as artists, and then say, how do we close that gap between those who are providing a service and those who are receiving that service, and us as society, the service that we receive from the artist. So I'll give over to members to ask questions, and the department will answer. And then on the way forward, we'll look at what else can be done, like including those this presentations being, you know, written down, and then later we can get the answers in writing, and then we can have another meeting where this report will be given. There will be a way forward in terms of what can be done and by when it will be done and what cannot be done, you know, in that, that is a little bit from me. Honorable members, this is the input. Are there questions that members would like to ask?
Can I trust them?
Let me just recognize the hands that I see. Honorable Gillian, and then there's Christians. We are from Bodelo Baha. Yeah, in that order, those are the hands that I've just seen now. Honorable Gillian, or Honorable Baha, you wanted to say something before? Oh, Morinche.
For me, it's important for probably start with the debate of discussion. I wanted to request that the department comes in first so that they are able to tell us what has been resolved and what has not been. So that as we get into the actual debate, we know what it is that we must engage on and what the department has already corrected or embarked on. That was just my suggestion, Chair.
There's a suggestion from the Honourable Baha that let us give the department to present as a respond to some of the questions, and then we fill the gaps. The Honourable your hand is up.
Chairperson, this is you. issue is that if you allow me to give my input, then I will give my view and the way forward.
Now we're talking about the approach to the meeting. What you're saying is that we ask questions. We don't follow a conversation.
My view is that there were so many allegations against this department that I think an hour is not enough for engagement. Now, my suggestion will be chairperson out of this meeting that a memorandum must be drawn up to give the department the opportunity to answer us on paper, and then after that go into another discussion with the department where the minister and the deputy minister are present, Chair. And if you allow me, I want to give my input.
Yeah, just wait a bit, Gillian, so that we're all together. Actually, what you and Bach are saying more or less the same thing. That there won't be enough time, for instance, to us, you know, to engage with these matters. Now, what I think we should do, we can either, let the members ask the questions. All of us will ask the questions. Can I just finish the honorable vision? That all members will ask the questions and then comment. And then after that, depending on what time is left, obviously we're not going to get the answers in one sitting today. That is just clear from the intensity and the depth of the questions that are asked. These questions are pertinent with meaning. These are not just innocent questions. We're talking to people who feel aggrieved, who feel ignored, and of course we come from a crisis situation of COVID, and it's not even, we're still in the middle of that crisis of COVID, going towards an end. As we're now in same level one. So I'll ask that the Honorable Bachan members, let us all ask questions, and then from there we can let the department respond, and then we'll have a way forward in terms of how are we going to deal with this matter going forward. Is that in order, Honorable Members? I suggest that we... Okay. Can I then start with you, Honorable Gideon, because your hand was up first, followed by Christians, and then Honorable Baha.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me welcome the input made by the sector this afternoon. Chairperson, allow me to apologize that I signed in late in this meeting, but I was bedeviled by the doctor. But not to worry, I'm still fine. During COVID-19, Chairperson, in this country, the inequalities throughout society was highlighted, and also throughout the sectors. And in our last engagement with this department, the minister and the deputy minister, I was one of the persons asking the question about the artists, because the artists were in the streets. And we received answers and what the department is doing to assist this artist during COVID-19. Now, Jefferson, if we look into the NDP, outlined that sports, arts and culture is the sector central to the country's nation building and social cohesion. But what I've heard today is the opposite, where we hear the statement that the sector is receiving. This assisted the chairperson contributing 1.7% of the country's GDP. The sector is contributing 7% of the national workforce in this country. Now, sitting here listening to a contributor of 1.7% to GDP, 7% of the workforce of this country, I am so disappointed. And I can also feel the disappointment of the sector. I also need to recognize that this country, when it comes to the financial side of government, we are in dire straits financially in the country, but I don't think, Jefferson, we are in that situation that the sector that is contributing to this country's wealth and to this country's workforce can come to this meeting at the Visaly property this afternoon. And it's all negative. I believe, Jefferson, that the sector throughout the years, I must agree, was low on our contribution towards him. And I was sitting here and I was listening, I was asking myself, the relationship between the sector and this department, there is definitely something wrong. There is definitely something wrong between the sector and the department, and that needs to be looked into. Also, Jefferson, in my position as a Jefferson of Yale in the NCOP, I was very disturbed to hear that this department was expecting the sector at the height of the pandemic to go physically into offices while we are also in the fourth industrial revolution. And that is one of my main concerns. What went wrong there? What happened there? And I've got so many questions, Jefferson. After listening to this input, I also know, Jefferson, that the department's budget has been cut. There was a huge cut throughout departments to assist the health sector in the procurement of PPE and all those things that the country needed at the stage when we're in the height of this pandemic. And that's why, Jefferson, I am really asking that this department must put answers to all allegations that was made by the sector to us and people. Because we can listen now to answers, but I need to see it on paper because I must study it, Jefferson. We can't just accept any answer. You know, Chair, if we want to build social cohesion in this country, that is so needed. It's so much needed. And if really, Jefferson, the nation building of this country is a needed thing that we must all work together on. And I think the NDP is clear, and the NDP is giving us this guidance that we must respect the sector. And we must try at all means to assist the sector, Jefferson. And I don't have questions. I will wait for the answers on all the allegations, Jefferson. Thank you.
thanks, Honorable Gideon. Yeah, it's a very sad feeling indeed. Honorable Edwin Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to say, first of all, that my knowledge of the arts industry is very limited, so I really welcome...
Honorable Christians, can we lower the hand of Baxter Theatre? Or Esther Fellow, you can continue.
Chairperson, my knowledge of the arts industry is very limited. And that is the reason why I really appreciate the presentation that was done by everybody. The planning was well done, and I think we have a very good understanding of what is currently happening in the sector. What I heard today was indeed, as Honorable Kian said, extremely concerning and worrying for the sector and for the department. We received a lot of information, as Lara said, but what stood out for me is that this is a sector on the brink of collapse. I think the sector is in real trouble. Now, the failure and collapse of this industry, for me, will see so many other programs failing. It's not only South Africa's tourism, it's people's livelihoods. Educational programs and degrees will fail and fall by the wayside. So it is concerning that the Department of Art and Culture does not see that what is happening here is a ripple effect on so many other industries. I would also like to say that it is disappointing that the Minister is unable to join us today. Understanding that he has another program, but I do believe that we need to follow up with him and, that we need to do these presentations with him again so that we can get a way forward. Now, what stood out for me there was you saying, and I heard this from you, that you said that you have no one listening to the cries of the industry, meaning that the department has also dropped you. It's an entire sector that seems, as I said, on the brink of collapse. I have a few questions and statements to both the department and to the people who have presented. Now, from the department side, what is the reason for the department's lack of communication with these stakeholders? It seems that there have been numerous times that the industry has reached out, but that the department has been unable to give them any true answers. Then, chairperson from our side as the select committee, I would like the chairperson to write a letter to the minister on behalf of the select committee to call on him and the department, to call on the minister and the department to come back to the select committee and to present their plan to us to save this industry. These presentations must also be shared with the minister. Then also, I would like the department to come and give us a briefing of the audit report of the COVID-19 CDC funding. I think that's very important at this stage. As Honorable Gideon has said, there's lots of allegations being made, so I think the audit report will indeed give us a way forward. Another thing that has come up is the economic recovery stimulus plan. I would like the department to make note of it, that what we need is a presentation from them. What kind of money has been allocated to the sector? To come and present that to us as well when they come. And then to Jacob van Rensburg, he asked a question. He asked if he should submit his recommendations to us and to the department. The answer to that would be yes. It would be a good way going forward. Submit those recommendations to us and to the department. So that we can pursue a discussion and map the way forward. And then just lastly, I would like to hear from the department, what plan do you have on the table to save these people's livelihoods? And by plans, I mean the money set aside for salaries, for keeping the doors of theaters open, for paying their bills, etc. What plans are on the table to actually assist everyone? And collections are concerned, just to one of the members that have spoken to, sorry, I just want to get to the point, to Ishmael Mohammed. Now, you have mentioned these that you spoke on matters of corruptions within DSAC. And I don't think we have enough time, and maybe you can put this on paper, but tell us shortly about the alleged tender irregularities that you have mentioned. How has this in action by DSAC and the final case against you impacted on donor funding, the morale of staff, and the reputation of the Market Theatre Foundation? And I would also be interested in the Market Theatre Foundation. I have another question with regard to Ishmael Mohammed, but I think what we should do is to put all these questions on paper to the members, and that they can give us a full briefing for our next meeting, because I'm sure this will not be our last engagement with the, with all the members on this forum. Thank you, Chairperson.
You welcome, Honorable. Let's give the members a chance to ask questions, and then we'll invite you to ask further questions later, and then, you know, the department will respond, and then we'll to come up with a way forward, where to from here. Who's next? It's Honorable. It's Baha. Yes,
yes, I apologize for not having my video on. I'm sitting outside just to be part of the meeting because I'm struggling to connect in my house. I think it's very important to see that there's a team that has come to the fore to present what they see as something that is not sitting well with them. Because at least we see that it's different people, different backgrounds, but people who share a similar pain, and they thought that it's important to come to Parliament and kind of share their problems with us. I think that must be welcome. Secondly, I think that for me, it would have been important to hear what the department has to say about the strong allegations that are made by the team that has just done the presentation, so that we are in a position to see whether there is work being done in order to address the problems that are put forward to this committee or not. Because, Chairperson, I think that these are serious allegations that are being made before us. And therefore, for me, it says that there's a need to hear what the department is saying. Firstly, Chairperson, if you look at what Mr. Ishmael Mohammed and Karabo Hokong was raising, those are it's serious issues which require that there must be something done in order to address them. For instance, Chairperson, how is it the responsibility of each subsector to provide protective equipment for artists? What is the department doing in order to provide support to such? When there's a cancellation of projects due to lockdown because of funding or non-funding thereof, what is put in place in order to assist those artists who were going to perform in such? And I mean that there's a lot of destitute individuals who are in this particular sector. What has the department done in order to assist people? Because, you know, we've been getting reports that a lot is being done to assist artists. And we are given numbers and yet there's a huge number of people who are represented today in this particular meeting who have not gotten anything from the department. Now, I'm of the view to the best thing that I think that there is a need made for that submission. When we said that there is a lot to be done, I know that it is. However, it doesn't give anyone a chance to do as we wish in terms of assisting people. We can't pick and choose who to assist. We must assist everybody equally. And so I'm saying to the thing that for me, it would be important to get a sense of what the department is saying, and then we take it from there. I've decided not to ask the question what I have, because I think that what I've just said would kind of assist us in moving forward. Thank you.
Yes, thanks a lot, Honorable. I think the feeling really, we all feel the same, more or less, and that this can never be enough. We really need enough time, and I think today's meeting is the beginning of many meetings to come. And this time, we're not going to leave this sector in our meetings when we meet. Either we meet with them before, or we meet them jointly with the others. It will even be nice in the future that we should have a joint sitting with the NA to discuss this matter, of this sector. That's how serious we take this encounter today. I mean, this exposure. Ooh, we knew that there were problems here and there, but I never knew that it is to this level, because I always check, we're spending this money on this, and, are we getting value for the money that we're spending in this sector? Are there some questions that members would like to ask? I'm looking at the... yes, Honorable Gillian?
I've raised mine because there was one issue that I missed, Chairperson.
Okay, you may.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Just the last one is something that I've also noticed coming from the Western Cape and representing the Western Cape in the NGOP. I noticed that there was a lot of presentations done by the Western Cape in the sector. And the one issue that stood out and that I need the department also to answer on is that allegation that was made that 20,000 was promised by the minister, but from the Western Cape government, the sector only received 10,000. I think that is also something that needs to be looked into. And I want to also stand with my proposal that if the department don't have enough time to answer, because I think they must answer all allegations that was made. If there's not enough time, then it must be on a memorandum and it must come to us in writing as members of the Select Committee. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Honorable Gillian. There are more questions. I don't actually even want to repeat some of the questions asked by the activists in this sector. because some of their questions are actually my questions. Some of their questions are our questions. The issues of the theatres in Limpopo and other provinces that don't have that. There's been promises about those over many years. But when you look at provincial budgets, they don't budget for what they say in them by word of mouth does not talk to the budgets that they draw. In many instances, the departments in provinces don't even budget properly for their events. They'll put the events on the on their PPA, you know, on their program, but not allocate funds for them. And towards the event, then I'm told that then they start applying for funds from the national department. So the provincial department also must take responsibility for the part that they are supposed to play as provincial departments. And in that way, as members of the NCOP, we need also to engage with the provincial departments through the portfolio committees in the provinces to ensure that, you know, this kind of mistake that happened some years ago do not repeat themselves. Are there further questions from the members?
No, sir, that's the
about the department. Yeah. Now I'll give over. Since there was a hand from, is it Lara Foot or what?
Yes, yes. Lara Foot from the Baxter Theatre, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you.
You wanted to say something before the department got its front?
Yes. Pick up on something, on two or three things that I think are very important. I'll be very brief. And it's, I think, because we're finally being heard. The one is CIFSA. We feel that CIFSA is a smokescreen between leadership in the arts community in theatre and dance and the department. So the department speaks to CIFSA, but there's also money involved. And we feel that that's somewhere not right. So the real leadership in the arts sector are not getting to speak to Parliament and the department, and this is the first time we've had that opportunity. There have been irregularities for several years that we've all been concerned about, primarily some of the state-funded theatres not presenting any work and not employing any artists, but rather standing empty and administrators getting salaries and millions being wasted. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is the Theatre Dance Employers Association met with the DG twice, very positive meeting where he asked us to find two representatives from every province and to speak to employers of artists across the country and come back with statistics and graphs, which we did very promptly. And waited for our next meeting. And the DG passed us to the Deputy DG, and we waited for nearly 3 months to get a meeting. And this was all over the COVID period.
Laura, excuse me. May we just say that we let's give the department a chance to respond because we're going to say 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then some of those questions that you would like to, we're going to come up with a way forward. And part of the way forward will deal with some of the issues that we have talked to.
Thank you.
Can you give the department a chance at least to respond in this 8 minutes? We know that it's not enough time to respond. So we'll find a way of, getting those answers at a later stage. Over to you, DG and your team. And I must also, I forgot to explain in the beginning that some of our members, even them off sick today, but some of our members were in a bus from the hybrid meeting in Parliament, en route to their villages. And some of the villages, particularly Acacia, has connectivity challenges. But anyway, let's give over to the DG and the team to
who could respond, and then we'll come up with a way forward. Thank you, DG.
Giving us a chance to offer a right of reply. We'll be really appreciated and suggested that you will be given an opportunity. Because when we looked at the agenda for today, we were not there or included. So some of the responses we'll present for now is to take the opportunity that the honorable members are giving us. But hoping that there will be a time then that will be coming here well prepared. But because we have nothing much really to write around what has been raised, we will do our best, honorable chair, to respond to some of the issues. Some of the issues that have been also highlighted by the honorable members. Maybe I will start sharing, indicating that with what's in particular because Ishmael has made of quality, but in accurate, if I can put it politely. First and foremost, the issue of state theatres, as has been indicated, that since 1994 nothing has been built. I just want to ask that the honorable members who would know that there is a theatre that has been built and constructed in Northern Cape. And that theatre is in existence. And there is not a clear battery yet. The issue of the negotiation yet. The department has taken pains to engage with the Limpopo group. Make the fund available. What the issue of what we call the process of doing usability studies to be done in that thing. The challenge is there, which we will provide details, has been about the issue of land ownership. Not because there was no money provided, but give figures of the money provided to do this feasibility and ensure that it is an open problem. Now, he also further argues around the issue of people having to come to the department during lockdown. The department decided, as part of its relief fund, to have what we call digital application, where the creatives were going to be assisted to make sure that they can be able to have their craft displayed and exhibited and shared through online. And the applications and the contracts were needed electronically. So people would scan those applications, those contracts that we sent, and then there was one. So during the release band, those contracts were done in an electronic mode. I will honorable chair have to then investigate under what terms and in which as he has given the example of who and how and when was that person forced to submit at the height of COVID, when our own official we're not even supposed to be here. Except a few that we're working with day and night to try and make sure that relief fund is accessed because you'll give me those details. And then I will engage with the official that he is referring to, so that I can be able to address that matter. Because exposing any South African to pandemic would not have been the right thing to do. But my understanding is that with the digital application, people were submitting their contracts electronically. We were sending them electronically. So it will assist me, before we come back to this meeting, to the Senate committee, that we are provided with that. If I have alleges that private sector is funding festivals and not this department, in his mention of APSA and Standard Bank, he makes a particular reference to the issue of National Arts Festival. I can even record check that festival is funded by this department. The online thing it is talking about as a translator, what for the funding of this department? But for purposes of amnesia and intention to tarnish this department, he uses the very same festival with fund as a festival which is funded by Standard Bank alone. We have festivals that are well known throughout this country funded by this company. To mention a few chapters, the Inner Boss Festival, Wheel Kaya Festival, Ebubeleni Festival, Makufa Festival, the Cape Town Festival, International Jazz Festival. Even at the time when they were faced with COVID and uncertainty whether this will happen, we still provided the funding. And we engaged with the organizers to make sure that that money reaches those who were already scheduled to perform. Yet here he comes and tells the public and South Africans that South Africa, this department, does not fund this department. Not the Uber Festival. The Standard Bank is helping. The Cape Carnival, that happens. The Mauritania Festival. He has been working for this department entity for years. Is he really having amnesia? He made a first set of mixed allegations on a section in this meeting. Going so around the issue of this department and its cultural institutions. But he has been part and parcel all about what they are getting. That will support and huge funding, even for the renovations of that magazine. The windy brow that we put under him. Is it really a means, or is there something else that I'm dealing with here? Now, Honorable Chairperson, the issue of SIFTA has been raised by various members who are part of this group that is presenting here. My colleagues who are creating this. Now, we will provide you with the historical data why SIFTA came into. It was not necessarily by this department. This was a consequence of an engagement when the too many voices of the sector came to the fore to say government, we need support. And
and they met with the former president. And they all only need to have an organized where they can, the way in which to engage with government. So collectively, even today as we meet here, the colleagues who are here are not the only ones who have been meeting with the company. Because of a number of creatives, even a number of organizations that are there, some at national and some at provincial level, that we have a desire to work with, but have a way in which we can be able to have an entry point of an organized sector. So the challenge is with thieves. We have now said that it has been smooth in itself. But the idea was to make sure that there is a collective voice when government engages with the sector. Not to muzzle other sector or subsector. Even today is not the intention for us to do so. But we do need a collective voice. Now, Chair, the issue that has been raised around communication. Chair President, after the President had indicated that the country is facing a pandemic, immediately the minister met with all the sector representatives, and that was in March. And the sports, on the same day, those of ages of the met the first group in the morning and met the other group in the afternoon. And the ideas about the relief and how we can implement it, in fact, arose from there. To say, how can the department assist us? As if that was not enough, it is one of the colleagues who has just spoken here indicated other meetings we've held with the Senate. However, we have always said it is impracticable to implement all ideas. We need to look at pragmatic ways to respond to the COVID. So we can't say we had plans before COVID happened. We'll be lying to this committee. So when we talk to the issue of the plans, we did not have plans before. Because we did not know what we were thinking. But after that engagement, we came with the strategy that felt to support as many creatives as we felt that when the minister started this, no, we look at everything that we're going to do in the first quarter of the financial year. Put that money in the basket for the minister. We looked at that, and that is when we raised that issue. As if that was not enough, immediately minister engaged with me to say this basket may not be right. And you look at what you have and be able to assist this said cash, which, by the way, minister was very keen. It's going to face a long fall of the pandemic than any other thing. Obviously, we even commissioned SACO to conduct this test on the infection. So when this happened and the minister then engaged with
MEC. On their own equitable share, they set us money. But over and above that, we then approached them after we looked at what is required. And Treasury agreed that from the grant we reprioritize for funding to support the state. But as if that was not enough, Honorable Chair, really. That's a little solution. The department did not only stop there from engaging with the sector. Whether it was me for meeting held with me or meeting held with the minister. Oh, we went further and said, the sector said, department open, we assist when we're dealing with the first wave. So that at the end of the day, we are able to work in fine. Honorable Chair, we can provide with names of many people who are involved in adjudication submitted by some of the sector organizations. But the department itself has not been adjudicated. We appointed sector people, both for the adjudication and the appeals. It is important, and we on the issue of efforts by the department to engage, and that the sector was not listened to. When the time comes, even on who I am and who was in that meeting, and I'm happy that the answer is because they assisted me as student to have a session for the first time with the independent team. And indeed, we had a lot of discussions and positive things. But at the time, the second, already the first wave was done. So what we committed, the retention of jobs, as a force to save jobs. And that, the person, quite a parcel of the government stimulus as announced by the president. Based on what they explained, we expected that when we engaged with both National Treasury and the project management office in the president, we said we cannot move the floor while the check is running. So we agreed we must create jobs of wherever we can. But we have met with the theater people as an example that I put. And they have raised the issue that even if they are employing 8 people or so, those people should be retained. Was trying to create new jobs when you are setting jobs does not make sense. And that was approved. But we could not make this announcement because when we started, everybody knew about billions of rands. But government was working and refining the plan, not only for this sector. So when the budget came back, when we had submitted plans and proposals to look into this issue, the budget that came back was cut. Even the period we're talking about, expense was 6 months. 6 months is impossible now. Because the issue that you must spend the money by end of March. Don't have a good chance. We are not perfect. But to argue that we that is giving genius.
we will continue with the employment stimulus package. We'll present and submit as requested the elaborate plan that is there in this regard. And we are working here, and we have briefed the sector on two occasions around the stimulus package. Even when the man came back no less, we called a meeting, we briefed the sector. So, Chairperson, for me, it will assist once we get this thing to be able to respond and provide you with whatever you need from our side so that we are giving you a complete response on what we've been doing. The issue of auditing COVID funds, the president of this country was very clear and tasked the Auditor General not to wait until things are finished, but to have what we call a special audit, which is ongoing. Honorable members, and those who are here today presenting to me, they can visit the Auditor General's website. We are there as a department. Currently, the special audit is going on. And that audit will be published, not by this department, by the Auditor General. So when there are allegations that are further extended towards the theater, state theater, they table year after year annually their audited statements. The colleagues from the arts, I met with them. They live stream our meeting with them. Honorable Chairperson. In that live streaming, I asked them, and I'm happy you are asking that Mr. Mohammed must give us this corruption and he must be free to report it up to it. There's a hotline in this country. But I'm for the arts. I even gave them any possible anonymous number, send us the alleged corruption, we will investigate. Today I have nothing. And when I said, then what is the reason when we met them again? And they indicated people might be victimized. Now, Honorable Chair, how do I deal with allegation of corruption when people are fearful? I'm still saying we are open. Otherwise, there is a hotline. So that we deal with corruption. But that is a cancer that this country is fighting. So, I am welcoming, Chair, what I know of time. I just thought these issues I need to raise for now. But there have been very positive contributions from this team. Some of those who seek to have a constructive criticism with us and we are open to engage. And I think we will take also those to assist us, including what will be submitted as was suggested by the presenters, that they've got proposals. I'm not sure, Chairperson, for now, because we will give you the full report. The revised white paper, we fully agree. It only got a go-ahead from Parliament. Last year. So before we could move with the rollout, which is what Minister can confirm, has tasked us to make sure as a priority we implement the positive things out of the white paper that can be done now. I have a team that is working on that, on what could be done in the short term, and in the medium term, and in the long term. Because the revised white paper, we believe, will transform the sector. And that rollout can't just happen by us alone. We will work with the sector, because it must benefit the sector. So when colleagues talk about regulations, they are aware that the Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Protection Bill were referred back by the Honorable President for six areas that need to be addressed. Because those particular bills, we believe one of the things they will do, they will liberate the creatives. If you look at it, over their objects. So, once that has been done, those are the Copyright Amendment Bill, which are all, one of them is 1968, the other one is 1978. 167 and 1678. Clearly, they are pre-democratic dispensation, and they are at the core of how this sector, in fact, is currently functioning, resulting in a lot of exploitation of the creatives. So we believe that once it is finalized, it will create limitless possibilities and opportunities for the creatives in regulating the fact over and above the revised white paper. So the issue of regularizing or regulating the environment for the creatives to flourish and thrive, and for this sector to create more than 1.7 of GDP and more than 1.1 million of jobs currently it has as per the research by 2018. It is important, and we agree with them, to have a very progressive regulatory environment which will minimize the exploitation. At the core among them are these three pieces of legislation. I will therefore then chair for now on the issue of relations, indicate that the relations are indeed having serious challenges with some of the sectors while we're working with others quite well. But it is something that we need to work harder, because we as a department must also understand and accept that we exist for only one purpose, to service the sector. That is a raison d'etre for our existence. So having a fractious relationship is not an answer. So we will commit, we are committing, we will work harder to build a relationship with everyone in the state. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I may respectfully request that we give Mr. Mohammed 2 minutes just to respond. Would that be possible? I realize we are running out of time.
Chairperson, where are you? Chairperson,
have we lost you?
It seems we have lost the chair person.
Okay, but it's 5 minutes past six already. Some of our members must be for meeting. And I don't think if the members will allow me to still handle this last part as the chairperson has lost his connection again. Member Dongeni, where are you? Are you still on the platform?
Yes, you can chat.
Thank you. Let me take the opportunity then to thank the sector who was in the meeting today. Is that DG of this brand new department and all staff members. Let me also thank the members of the select committee for the input. And we're looking forward to our next engagement. And let me also then ask the department, if there's questions that wasn't answered, then feel free to send it to the committee secretary. The answers you can send through. If there's any more questions of members that you feel was not answered, you can make contact with the committee secretary. And I must say that we can't allow any more inputs. We are already 7 minutes over our time limit that was given to us by Parliament. This meeting was supposed to finish by 6. And it's 7 minutes past 6 already. These members that must sign in to another meeting. Thank you very much, everybody. This meeting is adjourned.
Oh.
Thank
you. I'll go off and then I'm reconnected on the meeting day. Am I audible?
You are audible. I said
you are audible.
Oh my.
Oh my. Yeah.